Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to The Overlap. I'm of course joined by Rian. We're here to talk about a very interesting topic that is kind of near and dear to my heart. I don't even remember how we got to this point of actually coming up with this topic, but it's the one that at some point we talked about and texted about, and one that is a little bit different from the day-to-day of everything going on in Europe, because Lord knows there are only so many things that I want to talk about that are related to my team and probably your team too, in this screwed up season. But I digress. Rian, good to see you. How are you? What have you been up to the last like week and a half?
Honestly, not a lot different than I was doing probably the week or a couple of weeks before that. Since coming back from my trip, I was just telling you that I'm going to see Dune 2 this weekend.
That is true.
My girlfriend had not seen the first one yet. She's going to see the second one with me. And so we watched the first part over this weekend, and it was a success. Thankfully, she liked it. Or else it would have been pretty awkward on Friday.
That would have been terrible, yeah.
Or I could have found someone else to watch it with. But but either way, I'm very excited to see.
Nice.
It's on the same level as like as excited as I was to go see like Oppenheimer last year.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I want to hear your review certainly on the second one. And Rian told me yesterday where I can actually go and find and see the first one, because I have not actually seen Dune. Because I feel like it was just a running meme when it came out, and I was like, oh, this is just one of those I'm not gonna bother kind of movies. And then he raved about it, so he's officially changed my mind on whether or not I should go see a movie. So anyway, on that point,
it's a general rule of thumb, like at this point, is if Denis Villeneuve is the director of it, you should probably see the movie.
Yeah. As Rian so adequately told me yesterday, as much of a fan of his work that he is. So do I have to go back and watch Blade Runner and basically every other movie?
I would say yes, obviously. You don't have to see it before you see Dune, but you know, of course. Yes.
But now I have to add it to the list. Okay, cool. Good to know.
You can add Prisoners into that. What else?
Sicario.
Sicario, yeah. There's a couple others that I'm forgetting.
Beyond that,
but
I'm not sure.
But yeah,
all right, man, fine. I'll enjoy my free time with a movie, if you will. speaking of not movies, but there's a show. I think it's a CBS show now. I've been watching this nonstop for the last like 2 to 3 weeks. It's called The Neighborhood. I don't know if you've heard of it. It came out years ago, but they're still making episodes. And a friend of mine recommended it to me, and oh my God, I just like, it's not even like such a good show or anything. Like it's like fine, but it's like a good 25 minute laugh. And it's just, it's about basically this white couple that moves into like an all black town, in Pasadena. And it's just great.
Okay. I've seen ads. Yeah. I think I've seen ads for this show. Ads for it as I watch like Young Sheldon.
Oh, 100%. 100%. Yeah, they're wrapping that show up. Yeah. Gosh, that is very true. So anyway, that's been what I've been up to, other than spending time with my partner and whenever she and I get some time together. And yeah, that's basically life. I just kind of had like a deja vu moment, then we can move into actual football stuff. But we are just so firmly like late 20s at this point. Like just cautiously into that period, but very firmly entering it, in the way that like a couple years ago, a Friday night might have been like, yeah, we're going out to X place. Now it's like 10 p.m. I'm good. Like I'm solidly coming back from a movie or wrapping up a movie. And pretty early, decent Saturday morning with some soccer sounds fucking phenomenal.
yeah, I won't lie, like I still like going out to bars, and like the casualness of like going to a bar and hanging out there for a while. The difference is like the is not as much dancing, not as much of the dancing bar stuff.
That is true.
Now, so that's the big change, I feel like. And then, but it actually does make, you know, again, it's for me, like the times that I do go out and like do a more dancey thing, which I might be doing this week, like that, I enjoy it more, you know, you learn to appreciate it a lot more. Harder to do. You can't really do it every, weekend, obviously, but I mean, just like, I mean, and you could do it every weekend, but physically,
I
can't quite do that every weekend. That's a pretty big, that is the only difference, the less dancey part now.
True.
Yeah.
All right. Fair enough. I do like a good dancey evening every once in a while, but yeah, oh my God, if you ask me to go out and go somewhere every weekend, it's not happening, man. It's not. I love my friends, but it's not happening. Anyway, we have digressed just so far away from actual football for the last 6 minutes. Let's actually get to the topic at hand, which is not necessarily focused purely on the Champions League, not focused purely on the Premier League or La Liga. What we want to talk about today is effectively the concentration of star players. And we're going to be relatively subjective, right, over the course of this conversation. But I came to Rion a couple of days ago, and I kind of had this thought of who are the top 10 players in the world? Just generally speaking, I'm just curious about who those players might be. And you think of probably a couple of specific names off the bat, right? Mbappe, Haaland, Kevin De Bruyne, Mo Salah, right? And I kind of noticed something, right? Okay, those four or so players, right? Three of them play in the Premier League. One is between Paris and Madrid, just oscillating effectively at this point. And the rest are where? Because that's only about four or five. And I kind of started thinking about how you think, okay, maybe someone like Jude Bellingham, right? Who are those top players? This conversation is going to be who the best star players in the Europe's Big Five are going to be, but more so around why do star players choose specific teams or clubs or leagues over others? So Rion, as he so astutely does, the data scientist effectively that he is, dove into some of the data and came up with, I'm sure, a bunch of different possibilities of what players choose what. But let's start with just the overarching question, Rion. In your opinion, right, before we look at start talking about data and numbers and things like that, let's start with really talking about the top players in the world, right? Maybe let's start there. Do you have a couple in mind that really stand out to you other than maybe the ones that I mentioned? And then we can go into the rest.
Players themselves, not necessarily. Like, I honestly feel like the conversation should be more about, like, you know, why do players go for like, what are the reasons why any player mm-hmm. goes to a certain club or whatever it is. And when I try to think about that, I have like probably four reasons, but I'm also be interested to hear yours, of course. But the first one that I kind of thought of is like stylistic fit with like the team themselves they're going mm-hmm. to. Now, ironically enough, I don't think more than maybe 5 to 10% of players when they move actually consider that, especially the younger players. When you think back to like, using some examples that are like more close to my heart, like Kai Havertz and Timo Werner, like when they made their moves to Chelsea, leaving the Bundesliga, right? Like, I don't think they thought that much about stylistic fit because, you know, you kind of saw how much of how kind of difficult their time was, partially because they were in teams that weren't quite ready made for them to come into and take advantage of their strengths and weaknesses as players. Think of, let's say, Paul Pogba when he joined Manchester United, right?
Mm-hmm.
I'm a guy who, unfortunately, his career is probably pretty much done in Europe.
Effectively.
Over, yeah. I'm curious if that ban like extends all over the world, but that's for another.
Was it a UEFA or a FIFA ban?
Well, it was Italy. It was specifically like an Italian sporting court. Oh. So I mean, I assume it would kind of apply to the rest of Europe at least. But mm-hmm. anyway, him going to Manchester United, as talented as he was leaving Juventus, and I mean, he's still, I feel like for me, one of the most talented midfielders I feel like I've ever seen. But he was a guy who was shoehorned into being like this, like a defensive mid or like a very, like a more deep lying player where, you know, you saw
when he moved to United.
Yes, when he moved to United. Yeah. Like for all those years, it felt very wasted because he was given responsibilities on the playing field that didn't really match with like his actual playing style. That's why it was always kind of funny seeing how much better he was playing with France under a coach that probably understood him a bit more. So stylistic fit is the first one that comes to mind for me. And mm-hmm. funny, maybe it's more of a, this is what players should think about a bit more. And I think you see like the older players factor that in a bit more, right?
The experience comes into play there, yeah.
Correct, yeah. You know, when you've had the experience of maybe going to sides that didn't fit you stylistically, or maybe they did and you really did, or you really realize that is what you, the type of football you want to play. But that's kind of like the first one for me. Do you have any, before I move on to like my next one, was there any comments on that or like any other things that popped in your mind?
So one thing that popped into my mind is you talked about the concept of stylistic play not necessarily factoring in for players, right? And I think that it's interesting you phrase it that way because I agree with you for the record. Like for the most part, I agree that a lot of players, especially early on in their career, will think about other factors, which we'll get into in a second. But there are also a lot of clubs that are branded by the way that they play. So when you think of a club, and you think of, you know, I'll have to use Barcelona because that's the first one that comes to mind. You think of a certain style of play, right? Whether it's right or wrong, that's an entirely separate conversation. But you know what you're sort of getting into as a player when you fit into a certain club's model, whether it's the Red Bull model, like, you know, all of those different models, quote unquote. So it's hard to, for some of the biggest clubs in Europe, maybe not also think about stylistic play. So it's curious to me that there are a lot of players that may not have that match, right, based on their skill set or maybe not overly evaluate it. But style of play, I think, is certainly a factor. The one area that I would maybe say I would slightly disagree with you on, I don't think it's the number one factor for a lot of players. And I'll get into why, but first and foremost, stylistic play is, I think, a major, major factor. And it's curious to me that, of course, a lot of clubs are branded by that.
Yeah, and let me make this clear. This is not at all the number one. I don't believe it's the number one factor at all. Like, if I think I could say, I think maybe it should be closer to the number one for players.
Yeah, that I can get on board.
But with. I don't believe this is actually the number one. Like the number one, we'll get to it. I think it's the most obvious one. But
yeah, pride.
Yeah. Yeah, correct. Yes, banter obviously is the worst one. I think it should be close to number one, but yeah, it's not. It's pretty obviously not. I think the next one that I kind of think about is the country, like the actual place that they're going to live, right?
Interesting.
We've heard all the stories about, you know, Angel Di Maria's year in Manchester, right? Like,
you mean his wife's year in Manchester?
Yeah, yeah, you know, like a guy who was obviously an amazing player, and actually he was pretty good for Manchester United that season, if I remember correctly. But obviously it didn't work out for his family, right? Like it was too big of a difference, obviously, than Madrid and in Argentina in general. So the country itself, and some other examples, we're seeing guys who went to Saudi Arabia last year who are now considering coming back, and some of them have already come back in Jordan Henderson, right? So like the country itself, where they're going to live, that's I think that's one that is usually a big factor. I think that is a big factor. Look, Messi came to the U.S. and Miami specifically because it's an area that he knew culturally fit with his family. Like, so we have evidence that that is actually something that players factor into mind, right?
And I don't think this gets talked about enough. I would argue that this might actually be one of the number one or two factors for especially young players, because the people that are also helping those type of players make those decisions outside of the Messis, the Di Marias, right, et cetera, are your parents, right? Especially at that age, between 16, 17, 18, 19, 20. Like, you probably don't have a partner or a spouse to rely on where you're like, oh, where should we go? It's more about, like, where do we as a family set up, or where's best for us, right? Where's maybe best for, like, brothers and sisters and stuff. Like, that, to me, is such a big factor, because while I don't know if footballers view playing the sport as a job, for some people it is a job. So you're asking someone to relocate based off of where they're going to spend a majority of their time. And it's entirely valid to think of your physical location and all the things that surround it as really, really important. Obviously, weather, for example, being like a factor. If you ask me to go to Malaga over Manchester, regardless of playing style or team, like, as a kid, I'm probably going to want to play for a big Manchester club, but my family might be like, yeah, the south of Spain sounds phenomenal for the next 15 years. Let's do that. So yeah, I think it's actually extremely underrated.
Yeah. Like you said, that probably is one that actually in a player's mind, that might be like one or two genuinely. So the next one is where we get a little bit more subjective, right? So I put down here, like, the prestige of the club and or the competition, right? And when you talk about the club, when you throw the club in there, you can kind of throw in all that goes with that, whether it's the coach himself, maybe the stadium, the facilities, whatever, you know, all that comes with, like, that, the prestige of that club, right? Or the league that they're going to themselves. This is where I think you have to go a bit. Maybe you need to, like, go into the data a little bit here, just and as good as I could. So I went to Transfer Market. Shout out to World Football R Package. It makes it super easy to get this stuff.
But nice plug.
literally, I would just be copying and pasting so much without it. Transfer values are obviously very. It's a little bit of fairy dust, right? Not even a little bit. It's a lot of fairy dust, right? So Transfer Market, take it with a huge grain of salt, like not even a grain, like a mill, a whole huge mill of salt, if you will. This is in aggregate, I think it just about tells you the story. But if we're looking at just like the actual like valuations from Transfer Market of the players in the big five leagues, right? If we want to use that as like a marker of stature, of prestige or whatnot, right? You kind of look at the Premier League from the season starting 2022, so the 22-23 season. I decided not to pull this up for this season since we're not at the end of it yet. But the only league in the Big Five that has an aggregate player valuations is for every single player in the league of over 10 billion. And the actual number is like around 11.3 billion. And when you kind of look at what second place is, it's La Liga with about 5.2 billion. So, you know, if we want to use this as like it's kind of hard to measure prestige and that stuff, right? Like, but if you want to look at it as a chance to go play against the best players, or, you know, at a club with some of the best players, right? Then valuation, market valuation is is I think an okay thing to look at here. And
especially when the market valuation is double, right?
Yes.
That I think is the biggest part of what you're getting at.
Yeah. And because when I look between like La Liga all the way down to Ligue 1 being the shortest there, it's only about a difference in a billion. This is all US dollars, by the way. It's only about a difference of a billion. So that jump from you know, second to first, if you're a player, and you do hear the players say it a lot when they come to England, you know, the quote-unquote best league in the world, right? The chance to play against what players who are thought of as some of the best players in the world, which obviously gets baked into like these market valuations, is media hype, right? So that's something that I think that comes into a player's mind, right? Because we see very, very good players come and play in England for teams that you are just always surprised by, right? Like, trying to think of some examples. Like granted they did win the Conference League last season, but Lucas Paquetá playing for West Ham. Granted, he's arguably their best player, but the idea that he would be joining a team that was pretty close to getting relegated last season, and at the same time was good enough to win a European trophy.
Conference League, yeah.
It's like examples like that, where you can kind of see the prestige of the competition bears out a bit more. But then, you know, you look at basically any player who goes to Real Madrid or Barcelona, right? It's a lot about the club itself, right? So that's something that always factors, that I think always factors into a player's mind as well.
Well, you talked about two things there. You talked about European, right, accomplishments or competing in Europe and things like that. And while if you look at the ranking of clubs around Europe who have the most success in Europe over decades, right? I could talk about the last 10 to 15 years, and that's a very damning story of the quote unquote best league in the world. But in terms of over decades, I believe it's only, correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe it's only Liverpool that's in the top five in English clubs. I have to double check that because of the change from European Cup to
League and everything. Yeah. Else. Yeah. I think they're the only one with at least five, but I could be wrong. Yeah. I don't know exactly off the top of my head how many Manchester United have, but
yeah. The switch between European Cup and Champions League is throwing me off. But anyway, point being, there is a dichotomy between prestige across the continent and prestige in terms of skill sets within a concentrated league. And it's no secret that, I know we'll get into this in a second, that money talks, right? And when you have, whether it's investors or whether it's TV rights packages or it's other forms of sponsorship that are willing to come in and invest in a market that has these quote unquote businesses / brands in the form of teams that are able to pay higher inflated transfer fees, higher wages for these players that are objectively talented, especially when you're competing against another top team in Europe, that other top team is making their case based off of prestige, like we talked about, and history, and maybe potential projects. England and their number one market cap for all their players can speak to financial prosperity as well as all of those things that other top clubs can offer, especially if you are a Manchester United, a Chelsea, a Liverpool, an Arsenal, right? And City now, of course, in that conversation in the last decade or so. And so that, I think, is the biggest problem / tipping point is you've got a bunch of clubs that have that element of prestige. But now, as you mentioned, that gap between first and second and fifth is significantly higher. And so if you're a player, you ask yourself, why wouldn't I go to England in that scenario, especially if I'm competing against some of the world's top players.
Yeah, it all kind of funnels down into, like, you talked about it a bit there with the TV contracts and all the other stuff that comes into the league, into these leagues, right? And it all kind of funnels down into what I believe is more often than not the number one reason why any player goes to a certain team or league, whatever it is. It's the wages, right? It's the actual, how much are they getting paid? I think basically every player thinks about this. So saying examples is not gonna mean a lot.
And again, why wouldn't you, right? Like,
yeah,
playing football it's different in the sense that there is a love and a passion to it. A lot of people feel towards it, but it is also a job. Like, it is also paying your livelihood and probably your family's. So, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Especially when you're talking about, if you get to the very top level, basically in just about any one of these big five leagues, right, you're talking about, like, generational wealth. So, yeah, it makes sense that this is probably the number one reason. And this is where, you know, it's pretty obvious where the most money is, right, in Europe. Obviously, you have your certain clubs, your Barcelona's, your Real Madrid's, your Bayern Munich's, PSG, that can all pay, you know, well, I guess in Barcelona's case, when they want to, can all pay wages with the best of them, right? Some of the highest wages. But again, here you'll see, like, the big difference is that the Premier League can just pay a lot more, right? Yeah. I looked at for this season, this current season, the top six as of today. I went and got their wages. The average wage for each club in the top six in the big five leagues. And the Premier League is at about average. It is about 200 million US. This is annual wage bill, about $200 million. Yes.
That's a lot of money.
Yes. Yes.
That's crazy.
Yes, it is. you know, in second, you have La Liga with 140 million. Again, a league that we see a lot of the best players go to as well, right? You, mm-hmm. you mentioned Bellingham earlier.
Yeah.
Kylian Mbappe will be coming this summer and making even more money than the already ungodly amount that he was making in Paris. the Bundesliga, we know that you know, Bayern for many years was actually would try not to pay huge transfer fees, and you know, they got a lot of great players who came as without a transfer fee, but were still getting paid some of the best players in Europe. So those are, like, big ones, and then obviously a league on PSG is pretty much the only team that's paying huge wages, as the French league in general continues to struggle for money. But that becomes a big factor, right? The wages themselves, the amount of players that go to these teams, especially in England, but then, you know, the top teams in La Liga and Bayern, PSG, like, those are huge wages. Like, that is the biggest marker. Like, if you want to think about, like, why PSG have such a disparity with the other teams in their league, like, obviously the big one is they can pay the transfer fees, but mm-hmm. even more than that is the wages. They can just,
yeah,
you can get paid a lot more playing for them than, you know, 90% of teams in Europe. So
yeah,
probably even a higher percentage than that.
It's true. It's an interesting problem, because, look, we've talked about the Super League, right? We've talked about that at length years ago when it was first announced, and I think we both felt pretty strongly about it. But at the same time, I then go ahead and see how the new Champions League format for next year is structured, and I'm like, wait a minute, I've seen this before. And I think about the way that this new Champions League format was effectively designed. In a lot of ways, it was designed to financially protect some of the biggest clubs in Europe, because that's what they've been complaining about. Everything that you just mentioned, they've been complaining about for years, right? In terms of the when money flows to other people.
Distributed.
Thank you. Yeah. Started with a D. Yes. When it's distributed to other teams, and how it's distributed. And I feel like you see the cities and the PSGs of the world, who are obviously state backed, they inherently have a leg up. And that may not even just be in the context of transfer fees or wages, because you talked about that. What I'll even add to that is, think about in the context of all of the little things that you don't see on a day-to-day basis. The operations of the club, training field, chefs, facilities, all of that matters when you're a player, because the better equipped that you are in every aspect outside of just playing the ball on the field, your life becomes infinitely better. You are probably going to be a better footballer. The team can invest in proper coaches, medical staff, like all of those things matter as part of a club structure. And on top of that, when you can invest some of those additional wages to attract top talent, like I want to stop short of saying like we're potentially entering a dangerous territory with how the financial structure of Europe is balanced, but that's not what this podcast is about. And also, we've probably been in that territory for a while.
Yeah, I was gonna say, it's not even potentially. We're there already, right? Like, yeah. It's already there. I agree with everything you said there. You kind of keep digging into this money here, where it is and where it's concentrating. Mm-hmm. You start to understand more and more why. Yeah, the historically prestigious clubs outside of England,
mm-hmm.
you understand the question that they're looking around and saying, where has the money gone? Like, where is it? Like, it's not coming to me as much anymore. And in general, you know, it's going to, wow, like seven, like almost 20 clubs in one country every year are just continuing to widen a gap. Right. So
I do have one question for you along the lines of prestige, right? Because we talked about prestige. Does the idea of competitiveness fall under the bucket of prestige? Because one thing that I feel like is constant across the top clubs in Europe, and the ones that can pay the biggest wages, the ones that have the most interesting quote unquote projects, is the idea of competitiveness. And as long as those clubs are somewhat competitive, they will almost always attract top talent. And I think Manchester United is a perfect example of that. They have not been competitive at the level that we're used to pre-2013, but for the last 10 years, they've still attracted big names. Di Maria is one of them. I think, like, I actually don't know the exact number, but I think they have done upwards now of €1 billion, I believe, in transfer. I wanted to get the currency right, but in transfer fees over the last 11 years, right? Since 2013. And they're still not where they used to be, but they are still competitive in the sense that they do play in Europe, or did play in Europe, and they still can attract numbers for their games. Like, there's an element of competitiveness that is, I think, aligned with prestige. And I think there are a couple of teams that are walking that tightrope: United, Juventus, Barcelona, all of them are walking that tightrope, but they're still generally competitive.
Yeah. And I think that the prestige, going back to that reason, the prestige of the club is still a very big thing, especially, look, you're never going to get, I don't think we're ever going to get away from Manchester United being, maybe along with Liverpool now, and Liverpool's always been a big club, but like Manchester United being for foreigners, like such a massive club, like there's, it's almost, it's really hard not to convince them, right? Because the name itself, Manchester United, you kind of, you see it. I mean, you see it even with Chelsea in this past summer, right? Like having players decide to go and play for them over other very top clubs, right? And maybe like on the younger, like the younger players now might probably have a, probably have a different viewing of Chelsea as opposed to players, I don't know, 10, 15 years ago, right? Because now they've grown up with a certain level of exposure to Chelsea, and then City. I mean, City, same thing now, right? Like players, you look over the next like 5 or so years, you're gonna have players even when Pep is gone, because you know right now he himself is probably enough to attract a player, but even you go into the next like 5-10 years, a player who's maybe like 7 or 8 years younger than us will have grown up seeing Manchester City be one of the best teams in Europe for over a decade, and be like a, not even just one of the best teams, but a dominant mm-hmm. team in Europe. And now they finally have their Champions League, right? So it's something that's always evolving. Right, but there are certain clubs that's like no matter what, it's your Manchester United, Real Madrid, and Barcelona. I think are really the three that are always pretty much no matter where they finish,
at the top. Yeah,
yeah. No matter where they finish, like the season prior, like that summer, they could be not. They could have like a 2-year ban in terms of playing in Europe, right? And they will still be very attractive because those are probably the three most popular clubs, most popular fan bases globally, in the world, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's a really good point. And those three kind of are in like a tier of their own in popularity. Yeah. The Bayerns, even Chelsea almost skirts that line, but Arsenal's right. They're close, but they're not in that like just.
There's a mystical,
thing
to it, right? Yes. Like it's. It's like beyond the actual like performance, like current day performance.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. But don't worry. Fans will always be unhappy about the way the team plays. Like always. For all of these teams. Like,
yeah. Yeah. Like three teams who have similar, like, you know, Barcelona has the Barcelona DNA. Manchester United has the United way of playing. Yeah.
Real Madrid has friendship.
Yeah, Real Madrid is just kind of like win no matter what, and we're pissed at anything else,
especially when referees blow their whistle early.
Yeah. Oh goodness, yeah, yeah. Especially
I've seen Gil Manzano do some interesting things on the field, so I for one am not surprised, but pleasantly happy. Are there any other factors that come to mind for you outside of the ones that we've talked about? I feel like we've covered the biggest ones, I think
that's all ones I can think of. But again, I think a lot of those things. I think the funnel that it all comes down to, obviously, like wage is the big one, but also the conversation kind of, again, going back to this, it really makes you understand why. Those who want the Super League to happen, like you, mm-hmm. you can kind of tell what is moving all of this, right? And it does feel like even with this new format coming in, which, as you said, it 100% safeguards the top teams, right? I saw like a little video about it, like a 2-minute explainer on it.
Well, that's because UEFA released it today. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's not exactly like the Super League, but it's about as close as you get without saying here are the top teams that will sit in pot one.
Yeah, like, yeah, exactly.
It's very similar to that.
Yeah.
And if you're Joan Laporta or Florentino Perez, or at this point, I don't even know who runs Juventus because half of them have gone to jail. But if you're one of those club presidents slash leaders, I'm sure you are happy in some capacity deep down with how UEFA structured this in terms of your own club's benefit, but you are not going to call the Super League dead as a result. I don't think that they want anything else but that to actually be the case, because of the amount of money they feel like they are owed based on their contribution for, well, eyeballs, basically.
Yeah, like, here's the thing. Ultimately, it does not satisfy the root problem.
Exactly. Right?
Which is there's this one league that is getting a lot more money, than every other league, like from channels that are not accessible to all these other leagues.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So that's the root of the problem. And obviously that money is not getting distributed to other leagues. And we could have another conversation another day about whether that should be expected of a league, like if a league in Europe should be giving money to other leagues. Like, we can have that discussion another day. Yeah. But it ultimately, like, that's the root problem. Someone else is making more money than me, and I'm upset about it. that's kind of how it goes.
Well, I just found the title of the episode, The Root Problem. I don't think I'll ask something, or I'll figure out something else if need be. But, well, with that, Rian, let's shift focus towards the Champions League, because we've got the second leg of these round of 16 ties coming up. And just to go through them in terms of the first leg, because we're recording the night before the second legs kick off in the Champions League. Bayern Lazio finished 1-0 to, drumroll, Lazio. Not Bayern, and ultimately led to Thomas Tuchel announcing, or I should say Bayern announcing, that Thomas Tuchel will not be returning next year as Bayern manager. Real Sociedad losing 2-0 in Paris to PSG. Real Madrid beating Leipzig 1-0 in a game that honestly could have very well gone Leipzig's way. So I'll be very interested to see how that turns out this week. Obviously, Real Madrid will go through, because that's just what happens. Manchester City beating Copenhagen 3-1. Arsenal losing in Porto 1-0, as we might remember from that very, very last-minute goal. A game in which Arsenal had no shots on goal, interestingly enough, but beat Sheffield United 6-0 today, which I quite literally was in a meeting, and I was like, oh, the game kicked off, and finished the meeting, and it was 5-0, and I was so confused.
It was 3-0 after 15 minutes.
Yeah, it's just like, what happened here? Man. Anyway, what was I saying? Wait, what place are Sheffield in? Are they last now?
They are in, they're either 19th or 20th. Right. I believe they and Burnley are both on, I want to say, 13 points. And, and you watch them play, both of them play, you watch both of them play, and you realize they are still. Yeah, 13 points. They're still 2 points above, like, the worst finish in Premier League history. And you kind of try to think about it, and you're just kind of like, Jesus Christ. I think it was Derby County. It was like, how bad was that? Like, there's no shot Derby County was even this, was looked this bad. Like,
but shockingly, they did. Man. Well, okay. I don't want to take away from the Champions League stuff, but I just want to say this. In La Liga right now, Almeria are bottom of the table in La Liga. They haven't won a game all season. And they're on 9 points. But I swear that they have looked like a mid-table side every time they've played. They went 2-0 up to Real Madrid. They gave Atletico fits. They gave Real Madrid Barcelona and Girona fits. Like, it's not as bad of a team, and they have zero wins. So something maybe happened in that Derby County year. I don't know much about Derby County in that context, but Hey, smoke and mirrors, my friend. Smoke and mirrors. And I confirm Sheffield are in 20th, but they're tied for points on 13 with Burnley.
Yeah, right, yeah. So. You watch it, you're like, I'm like wondering how the hell did they get even 13 points, right? Like it's. I'm gonna have to really dig into this, and I think honestly, a lot of their points are against like each other and like Luton as well. So anyway, a discussion for another day.
It must be, but I'll just quickly round through. Barcelona, Napoli, 1-1 in Napoli, return leg in Barcelona. Dortmund, PSV, 1-1 as well. And Atletico losing to Inter in what was, to be honest, one of the most, how do I phrase this? It was one of the most interesting games from the perspective of me watching that game and thinking, this is how demanding and this is how fascinating top level football is. Like, it was such an interesting battle to watch this play out because it truly was like watching just punch after punch go back, like a fight in the midfield for the ball. It was mesmer. I love that game. But anyway, Rian, let's quickly round through kind of expectations for these second legs of these round of 16s. I want to start with Bayern really quickly. Losing to Lazio, of course, in the first leg. Mm-hmm. No one expected that. They have since gone on to lose, win and draw in that order. Is it really possible that they get knocked out in the round of 16 tomorrow?
And you have to throw in that loss to Lazio was just a few days after losing their biggest game of the season. Losing 3-0 in that, and not a 3-0 that was like flattering to Leverkusen. They were truly so much better. And now the lead in the Bundesliga is 10 points for Leverkusen. So they still have some games to go, but like it's looking pretty likely that Bayern will not win a 12th straight title. So and the loss to Lazio at the same time was not unlucky either. Like maybe that game could have been 0-0, honestly, because neither team really created much, but it wasn't like they played well and kind of just lost because the sport can be stupid sometimes. So that really wasn't the case for them. So I expect, Lazio has not been good this season either. That's why it was even more like crazy. I expect that Bayern will win. The game will be in Munich. I don't know if I necessarily would bet on it, but this is someone. I'm saying this as someone who, prior to that first leg, had Bayern going through in a parlay with a few other ties. So that was not the one I was expecting to get nervous on. Honestly,
my guy, you can't even speak objectively about these games anymore.
I don't think I would necessarily bet on Bayern to win the second leg. But I think they will go through. It's a pretty not untenable. It's just we saw it last season. It was really weird that they sacked Nagelsmann as is. They really, really got lucky winning the league at the end there. They got lucky in the sense that Dortmund did not win a game they should have won.
Dortmund poo-pooed themselves. That's clinical way.
Yeah. give all the credit to, Musiala scored an amazing goal to win the league at the end there, right? But they really had no business winning the league. So, either way, I think, we saw it again in the Champions League last season, what City did to them. So, I think if they were to catch, if they were to catch, like, Inter in the next round, if Inter makes it through,
That's not going to be pretty.
Like, the pace that Inter counters at, and how good they are in transition and just moving, being not entirely direct, but like that would be one that, like, if you have watched any of Inter this season, you would not expect Bayern to come away with anything from it. But that's just like one example. Like, they come up against Arsenal, I think, is a very similar situation. Although I know Arsenal fans will be scared to see Bayern again in any sense. But, like, I think they come up against any of these, any of the truly top teams that we talked about a few weeks ago of, like, the actual contenders to win. Yeah. And I know that I did have Bayern in that previously.
Well, contender.
Did say they were fringe. Right? I said they were fringe, but
I wasn't even coming for you. But, relax.
But yeah, if they came up against any of those other sides, I think they could truly get ripped apart. So
it's true. Well, let's hope that they, for their own sake, they do get a chance to be in the pot for the quarterfinals, because right now they're not. So
yes,
that'll be a very interesting game, as at least the time of recording tomorrow. Against Lazio, and Real Sociedad PSG is another one where I think I'm very firmly out on Real Sociedad now. They have really taken a turn, not for the worse. Sounds like a dying loved one, but like they
just
really
can't score.
Yeah. And from everything that I've watched over the last month, right? They cannot score. I mean, they went five games without scoring a goal between January and February. But more importantly, like the effect that going out to Mallorca in the Copa del Rey semifinals had, I think, on them, especially in the way they missed penalties. And I believe it was Oriozabal that took the last one and just rarely misses a penalty. And it was just, I feel like this team is just so deflated now, to the point that Sevilla beat them over the weekend. Like, we're talking about this Sevilla, like the Sevilla that is so shit that I cannot even stand watching their games anymore. And so I to be honest, like, Real Sociedad might get smacked by PSG, even though it's at home, unless a miracle happens, like truly against unless a miracle happens. So sorry, La Real fans, but that's at least my thoughts on it. Rian, the Real Madrid Leipzig match was really
good. I watched the first leg of that one. Again, cards on the table here. I had Leipzig to get through that tie, and so that first leg was
gave you
excruciating hope, you know? Excruciating to watch, because they had so many chances. And of course, like, you know, very early on in the game they scored, and that tough,
you mean they didn't call.
The call.
I mean, look, Leipzig played wonderfully well, especially in that first half, right? Mm-hmm. It is the only reason Real Madrid are up 1-0, which is a big advantage when you're going back to the Bernabeu, but the only reason is because Brahim Diaz decided to become prime Ronaldo.
At
that point. Like,
I mean, I just, like, of course, it's of course, it's not gonna be Vinicius or Bellingham or anyone there else. Of course, it's gonna be him. Why not?
Because that makes sense.
Yep, it's just kind of how it goes. So
you can really hear the aggravation in your voice.
It's tough. It's tough. Leipzig played really well the first leg, and let's see what happens.
Never get a bet against Madrid, man. I learned that
lesson. I won't for sure.
No, you literally have. What are you talking about?
I mean, yes, that's true. But
we got to teach you.
I understand. I understand the sentiment of it. I think Leipzig. I think they'll make that a very tough game still.
I agree.
There's still so much. They still have a lot of pace in their team. And I think that really did give Madrid troubles in the first leg.
It did. Yeah. I'm going to skip over City Copenhagen because City are up 3-1 on a tear. Let's just move on. Because if City don't make it through this, I will All right, Arsenal Porto.
In my mind.
Let's talk about Arsenal Porto, because I said this to you before the Arsenal game. I said it to you during the Arsenal game, and then I said it to you after. I said, this is a game that Arsenal could walk away and lose because they are going to Portugal. Very few teams show up to Portugal and win, let alone draw, other than, of course, you know, my team who did it earlier this year. But other than that, like, Arsenal played horribly against Porto, And they Porto were very prepared for everything Arsenal had to throw at them. Now, do I think it's going to be a situation where Arsenal get zero shots on target? Probably not, especially at home. But do I think it's entirely possible that Arsenal do not go through? Yeah. Yeah, I do. I'm curious to get your take on this this tie and the next one we'll go through.
It was just so passive from Arsenal in the first leg. It was so passive. If you are an Arsenal fan, I'm sure that was just extremely disappointing performance because they held the ball like a lot. They had a lot of possession, obviously, but they, as you said, they didn't get a shot on target. But they didn't have a lot of shots, period, in that game. I think they only had six or seven shots overall. So it was really poor, really, really poor. So I expect they win, obviously, the second leg. I think it's not... I'll put it this way. I think this ends up either being just, like, quite an almighty, like, avalanche of... Well, like, maybe, like, Arsenal wins by 3 or 4, right? Or this gets very tense. And... It's a one goal game after 90 minutes either side. So also that's
interesting.
That's my thought. It's either Arsenal wins this by 3 or 4 goals in the 90 minutes, or it's nil nil or 1-0. Either way, after 90 minutes, and if it's 1-0 Arsenal, then we're going to extra time, and
yeah,
and obviously it'll get just even more tense
from there. Yeah. Either way, I think it's going to be very tense, to be honest. I do think Arsenal are going to come flying out the blocks, though, wet at home. For the first 10, 15 minutes, I think it's going to be relentless, or at least they're going to try and make it relentless. And Porto, I think, are going to just try and slow the game down as much as possible throughout this entire game. So I'm very curious to see who goes through in this. I'm going to make a bold prediction, and I'm going to go ahead and just say Arsenal go through. I know they're the favorites in both the tie and the game, but I do think this is much harder, as we've already seen, for them. So I'm going to make a bold prediction that Arsenal do go through. Barcelona-Napoli. This team.
Yeah, very different context to this game now. After the injuries to De Jong and Pedri.
Forget about the injuries for a second. Napoli have gone on a tear in the last 2 weeks. They have a new manager, and they've scored 9 goals in what, 2 games? I'm screwed, man. Our defenders don't look like they could keep us anything out of a goal, albeit they did a wonderful job against Bilbao this weekend, even though that game was a snooze fest. This is a very different game than it was in the first leg in Napoli, because yes, the injuries, but also again, Napoli going on a tear, and most importantly, like, who do we play in the second leg? And also, your cats hate your apartment. That's what I'm learning in the last couple of minutes. But anyway, point that I was making is it's a very different game. It's a very different tie. You can say it's in Barcelona, but the Montjuic isn't really that great of a stadium at this point. So to be honest, this is a coin flip. Barcelona played much better in the first leg and arguably should have won by probably 2 goals. But I need an objective set of eyes of someone who has not bet on this game. Please give me an objective set of eyes on who you think will go through.
Well, pre Pedri and De Jong injuries, I would have said definitely Barcelona. But I mean, I realize Napoli has been better recently, but man, they are so far off the team that they were last season. So this one's gonna be in. Oh man, I don't know. I think this could go to penalties. Honestly, God.
I will say, if this goes to penalties, I would actually favor Barcelona. But still, like, that is just. I don't want to deal with that. Anyway, let's move on to PSV Dortmund. A 1-1, very interesting tie. Mm-hmm. I feel like Dortmund have to be slight favorites, especially given that this game is at the Signal in Iduna Park. Mm-hmm. Any other takeaways from this?
Yeah, I expect the first leg was pretty open, especially in the first half. The second half, Dortmund definitely kind of sat back a little bit more. The penalty was fortuitous, let's just say, for Malik Tillman and PSV. I would also favor Dortmund to win that second leg. I think they're the betting favorite as well. But it's a situation where PSV doesn't really play to defend, right? They're not gonna be trying to nick a like one goal and get out
as Arsenal tie, right? Found out.
Yes. So I think it should be a pretty open game. Funny enough, Dortmund I think have been pretty like fairly conservative playing in Europe, but I'm gonna say Dortmund get through. But look, they're really good in attack. Like PSV is really good in attack. Mm-hmm. The question is always kind of like, how much can we take from like the Eredivisie, like being that good. Yeah, how much can we take from itself? Because they're not the level of how much they have to defend in the Netherlands is quite a low bar compared to what they're gonna have to do next week against in Dortmund. So. I'm hoping for a very exciting open game, but I think ultimately Dortmund will defend better realistically.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. No, I agree with that. Lastly, Atletico Inter, Rian. Inter, we've talked about, have been having a phenomenal season, played incredibly well during this game. Any reason to think that they wouldn't go through?
I mean, the only reason is that they'll be away. Is that would be the if you wanted to bet on Atletico, it's like that's a really tough place to go and get a result. I think Inter are that good. I think they are, like I said it already. I think they are one of one of the three best teams in Europe right now. Maybe Well, I guess you can throw three or four, because I have to remember that Leverkusen have been amazing themselves.
Yeah.
But yeah, they are one of the legitimately they can win this competition. So, and I think they have a better chance of winning this competition if they get past this round than Atletico Madrid would if they get past this round. So, I think Inter will be able to in whatever fashion advance through to this next leg. I don't think I foresee like a blowout or anything either way.
No.
But whether it's through 90 minutes, 120 or penalties, we'll see.
I agree. Now I agree that it's going to be close, but I'm going to make another bold prediction. Atletico have, I believe, only lost once in like all competitions. I have to double check that at home. And I believe it was against Bilbao in the semifinal of the Copa del Rey. I'm going to go out on a limb and say Atletico go through. I realize that that might be dumb. I realize that that might not make much sense at all. But I'm going to go on that limb and say that they go through based on their incredible defensive record at home. Although they haven't necessarily been that great when it comes to keeping that many goals out of their own net. Defensively, their center back pairings have been off most of the season. But I'm going to say that Atletico go through based off of that, and I think they can make it 1-0 to go through the 90 minutes. I think the team that I would favor more between 90 minutes and 120 is Atletico, and the team that I would favor more on penalties, I would honestly probably say Inter. But I'm going to go off the assumption. I'm going to go. I think it's going to be 2-1 to Atletico and goes to penalties. Atletico go through. That's all right. My prediction.
Yeah. Yeah. This is a tough one because like they also both set up in very similar formations,
three
at the back. So it's, I saw someone else say this, that they kind of wish that these two would have played someone else in the round 16, just to be a little bit more, just not to have them play against each other, because it is so cagey. It's cagey. I would like really favor these two to win, to beat almost on any other side in this round of 16. But it sucks they have to play each other. But I mean, sucks for that. Good for us. But
it's just luck.
It's gonna be. I think this is the most interesting second leg of the ones we have on tap here. So
agreed. Well, with that, ladies and gentlemen, I think we'll just touch on the fact that the Premier League title is, I have to double check. I thought I heard my mousetrap for a second go off. I was very concerned, but Liverpool are still in first with 63 points. City very close behind, 62. Arsenal on 61, Aston Villa still in fourth with 55, Spurs with 50, United in sixth at 44, and so on and so forth. Shout out to West Ham for actually winning their last two games and not getting absolutely blown out as they did against United and Arsenal. And then at the bottom, you have Luton, Burnley, and Sheffield in that order, looking like all three of those will probably be going down. To be honest,
yes, correct. Yeah. Unless Everton does have another charge that they are waiting to hear back on.
Are they actually? I thought they had already ruled the second.
Yeah,
time.
There's like two different. Yeah, so that mid-table is the only Everton. Hope. Yeah, it's the only hope that Luton has is Everton getting points deducted to oblivion. But just to touch quickly back on the top. This is a lot of fun. There are three teams that are, and I mean, in Liverpool proper right now race. Liverpool dealing with the injuries that they've dealt with, getting these. I mean, the win this weekend against Forest, just so desperate and crucial to get these while they have the injuries. But we have three teams that legitimately, any one of them could win the league this season. I don't think this has happened since. About a decade ago, if I remember, when it was City, Liverpool, and Chelsea. That's the last time I can remember three teams in England, at least legitimately being this far into the season and all of them still having a really good chance of winning the league. So, big one next weekend. City playing Liverpool at Anfield.
Yeah, that's... Feels reminiscent of 2019 all over again.
Oh, gosh. Yeah, that should be a lot of fun. And then City play Arsenal after that, and then Villa the week after that. So,
hey, they play Copenhagen in between. Let's say.
All right, I'll talk about it in the league.
Yeah, I know.
Those are their next three. I'll say this. If City don't get at least 6 points from those three games, I think it's going to be, I mean, they could still end up being very close to whoever's in first, but it'll be very difficult. I think it'll be very difficult for them.
I agree. Which again, part of why I've been saying that Liverpool are the favorites, but most importantly, these top teams haven't played each other in the second half of the season. And that's so crucial when it comes to, the points distribution at the very top, especially when the difference between first and third is 2 points, right?
Yeah.
I think it is, however, more likely that the team to, what's it called, win the league, I think it will ultimately come down to winning games that other teams in that top three do not win. For example, not playing against each other. I think those results will certainly matter, but I think it's equally as likely that Arsenal slips up to Villa, or I think it's equally as likely that Liverpool slip up to maybe not Everton, but a West Ham, right? Mm-hmm. Something like that. So I'm more concerned about those performances and those games than I am against those teams slipping up against each other, because I think all three of those teams are cognizantly aware of what's at stake, and they will take a 1-1 draw. If need be. And I don't know why my computer is thumbs upping the whatever.
It's an agreement.
Hey, the AI agrees with me. So I'll take it. But anyway, well, with that, ladies and gentlemen, we'll wrap up. Thank you as always for listening. We'll be back soon. I'm sure there'll be more crazy things that happen in this world of football that we live in. But we do love chatting and talking through all of them. So anyway, with that, thank you as always, and we'll talk to y'all soon.
Thanks, guys.